Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Connecting the Dots with Casey Tuckness. I am your host for this evening. And what a show that we have this evening. Today is the last day of March. I mean, can you believe it? We're already in spring. March 31st, I mean, tomorrow marks the new fiscal month of a quarter, and here we are. Tomorrow actually marks a monetary date for me that is very personal to me. So this evening I, you know, have a couple of people that I, you know, want to bring on, and I want to tell them how much they meant to me over the past horrific 9 years. I'm going to just tell a little bit about my story for those of you that are unaware of what happened to KC Tuckness. My and let me get one thing straight. My ex-married name was Mercer, and so, you know, legally it's KC Mercer, but it is, no matter what, K dot C dot. So what really happened with KC Mercer? What was the story behind all of it? Well, I share this with you because I know that I'm not the only one out there that's going through this. I have risen my voice. I have told my story over and over. I have, you know, people are sick and tired of hearing it, but I am going to tell it until they gag me. I'm going to tell it until they stop it. But our financial industry, the financial crisis, started with screwing over middle-class America. And when I say that, I mean, there was a document that was dated March the 4th, 2009, and I'm not calling any political games. I'm not saying who, what party is responsible for what. So don't even go there with me. What I'm telling you are factual dates. March the 4th, 2009, there is a document that came down from the White House that basically stated, it claimed, state every single step, step by step, on how they were going to premeditatively take down middle-class America. First step, you're going to go after the working class. Second step, you're going to go after those that pay their bills. It says this in this document verbatim. I mean, it's the most disgusting thing whenever I found that. And I'm like, oh, my God, that is exactly the very next step that they did to me. Oh, my gosh, they did that too. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about who KC Tuckness is. As a little girl, my mom and dad worked so hard. They were you know, we were middle-class America. My parents always wanted to raise us in the nicest neighborhoods, which, you know, in the long run was actually harder on me because I was raised, you know, with all the wealthy kids, but I couldn't keep up with what the wealthy kids were doing because, you know, my parents were trying to do hard enough just to make ends meet. So, you know, with that being said, I always tried so hard to pull my end of the weight, to pull my end of the deal, to not make it as hard on my family. Well, in that time, I have always had a job, and, you know, sometimes three of them at a time. My mother owned a collection agency, and she was also in real estate. My father, he had the same job all of his life. He was in distribution. I mean, a very solid man. You know, my parents raised us on two things, your word, your credit. That's, you know, you don't mess up either one. Well, I would sit back and, you know, my parents, they weren't aware how much I was watching them and how much I was paying attention to what they were doing, whether I wanted to follow that step or whether I was watching it because I didn't want to follow that path. You know, it was like, okay, I see that they're really having to work hard over here, but, you know, wouldn't it be easier if we went this direction? Call it what you want. I just call it, you know, being the third child, you know, that was very creative and very, I just wanted to know. I wanted to learn. And with that being said, my first job in high school, I worked for GMAC, and I was in the repossession department at GMAC. I repossessed cars for GMAC. I was a bill collector. I was a skip tracer, and I was very good at it. After I graduated high school, which I graduated a semester early, I ended up going to Dallas, Texas, and I applied for a job with Ford Consumer Finance in their collections department. So I thought, okay, look, I'm going to go from GMAC in collections to Ford Consumer Finance in collections. How about that? So I got the job. I literally moved to Dallas, Texas with $40, a full tank of gas, and $40 in my pocket. I stayed with my sister for 1 week until I got my first paycheck. They gave me a little bonus an incentive bonus to start, which helped me with the deposit for my apartment in Arlington, Texas. My office was in Las Colinas, and I get to work the first day. I go do the interview. I get the job. I go to work my first day, and guess what? It was actually for mortgages. And I'm like, mortgages? I only know how to take away cars. I don't know how to take away houses. I'm 18 years old, but I bet I can figure it out because there's an incentive behind it. There's games behind it. There's, you know, pay behind it. And, you know, there's contests behind it. And with any contest, I want to win that contest. And that's just, you know, who I was as a person. I'm 18 years old foreclosing on houses just so I can win the Triple Crown. I mean, all they wanted to do was get people in and out. Now, this was back in 1990. So this wasn't in the 09 era when this whole craze started. Well, I bring you that to tell you that ended up being the associate. For Consumer Finance, the associates, and then, you know, I've been talking with this dear friend out of Washington, D.C., amazing, amazing, like, absolute genius, and he's like, oh, my God, was it this, and I'm like, yes, how do you know all this, you know? So I share that background with you about myself because, you know, if you know me right now, I've been in media for the past 15 years. And working for the Walt Disney Company, and then, you know, we all knew I got sick due to heavy metals toxicity poisoning. But let's go back, for the record, let's go back 9 years ago tomorrow. I always loved April Fool's. How about y'all? I mean, do you, like, love April Fool's Day? Because, like, I would call my daddy, and I'd say, hey, Dad, Aunt Toy broke her leg today, you know, and I'd be, he's like, no, really, what? And I'm like, just kidding, April Fool's, you know, or just silly, silly stuff that made no sense, but because it was April Fool's, it was always such a fun day for me. That day was stripped of me 9 years ago. Even though it was just a little playful game, it was stripped. April Fool's Day 2009, the most horrific thing that could have ever happened to America's economy, happened, and it happened to me. April Fool's Day 2009, the people that were living in my house, Skip and Kathy, they were amazing, amazing, amazing tenants. I bought my home because I had gotten a divorce from Amarillo, Texas, and I decided to moved down to the Woodlands, Texas. I put $60,000 down on my home, and that was going to be my home. But I was moving with my career, with my job, to work for TV stations in Oklahoma City, San Antonio. So I moved around. I was so fortunate to have these two people staying in my house and leasing for me that were amazing, amazing Christian people and very loyal and just awesome people. Well, I remember receiving the phone call. I was in the newsroom at NBC at WOAI-TV in San Antonio, and I get a telephone call from Skip, my tenant, and he said, hey, KC. He said, you received a FedEx package here on your doorstep. He said, it's from Bank of America. It looks pretty official. Do you want me to open it? And I said, sure, Skip, go ahead and open it. You know, see what it says. He said, Casey, he said, it says here, congratulations, you qualify to lower your mortgage payment. He said, your next payment. And I said, really? And I'm like, that's awesome, you know. I said, I'll tell you what, just fax. He said, do you want me to overnight it to you? And I said, no, just fax it to me to the TV station. Let me read up on it, and then let me follow up with it. And he goes, okay, sounds good. So Skip faxes it to me. I call Bank of America. At this point in my life, all my T's were crossed. All my I's were dotted. I was not the deadbeat, you know, resident in the cul-de-sac that wasn't keeping up her end of the bargain. I was the little lady at the end of the block seeing this was happening to an entire community. It wasn't just me. It wasn't just me at all. As a matter of fact, the last count that I have it, it was 115,023 people in my county alone that were affected by this. And ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening, I know you all have your stories. And I have, this week alone, we saved one guy from being evicted. Well, not even evicted. This guy, he bought his house in 2008. I went to court to go see how it was handled on Wednesday. Went and took in where he was had been dual tracked. And, you know, it's just so amazing to me to see how these banks are getting by with so much fraud, so much corruption. I mean, like, when does it stop? I mean, is the end of time, I know that this is going to sound a little crazy, but is the end of time really the end of time?
Or is it, you know, is it where, you know, they come and do some chemical warfare on us because they've screwed up the economy in our society so bad. So bad. And when I say this to you, ladies and gentlemen, they are still offering this horrific HARP and TARP and reverse mortgage program. They're still doing it. April Fool's Day, 9 years ago tomorrow, my family will never be the same. My family has seen me fight through this. For 4 years, I didn't tell them even what was going on because that's not who my parents raised. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be looked at as a failure. I'm going to be looked at like I don't take care of my business. I'm going to be looked at like what a loser. I mean, this person's a deadbeat. I wasn't a deadbeat. I was an American citizen living the American dream, paying my taxes, paying my bills, paying my mortgage. And you know what? They ended up not wanting mortgage payments anymore. They didn't care about the mortgage payments. All they wanted was a house. And you can call me stubborn, you can call me whatever you want to, but what I have to say is that it's got to stop. The mortgage industry is so, it's so wrong right now. It is, I think that they realize we all know it's broken. We all know it's broke. Can't we bring in some Richard Bowen, some Michael Winston, some David Dahan, some Reams, some Judson, some, you know, Judge Sadler? Can't we bring in a team of people to just say, let's get this fixed on behalf of our nation? Trump's got his hands full. Those of you like him, those of you don't like him. You know what? I don't think we could put anybody in office that we're all going to agree upon. But what I do have to say is that I just feel like we need to do something different. I am going to actually bring in a couple of people. I want to bring in Ronald O'Donnell. I know that you're listening, so if you all will please just give me a few seconds. I am going to go to my radio, and I'm going to bring in Ronald O'Donnell.
Hello there.
Hi, Ronald. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Casey. I'm doing really fine. I hope everybody
out there
in your listening audience is also.
Do what?
I'm hoping everyone in the listening audience is doing well today also.
Yes, of course, of course. Let me introduce you. So, well, introduce yourself, if you will. Just explain to everybody, like, you know, you're from California. You ran, you know, for Senate. You're a very intelligent man.
Well, thanks for that latter one. But
oh, you're welcome.
That's questionable once in a while. But I'm 65 years old, and I graduated from law school in 1978 with a doctorate degree in law, and I specialized in real estate. Those were the subjects that I really liked. While everybody else wanted to be an F. Lee Bailey, and they wanted to do trial law, and they wanted to do, you know, they wanted to be on the TV shows. That was the goal back then in those days. The most boring subject in law school then and probably now was real estate. Because, you know, they used to use the, and they probably still do, I don't know, it's been a while. But, you know, we would talk about fee simple subject to condition subsequent and fee simple subject to condition precedent and see fee simple, you know what I mean. They used a lot of Latin phrases back then to describe what is so easily describable now because of efforts like you, Casey Tuckness, in your lawsuit. We're changing it from Latin for the insider groups to English to, you know, the people that this United States government is supposed to serve. In other words, the language shouldn't be so complicated that, you know, someone in high school can't understand. Yet they make it difficult in court. I don't think it's just to make a jackass out of us. They make it difficult so that they can deceive us and they can censor us and to keep us confused. Otherwise, what's the use of using a dead language in a courtroom?
Correct.
You know, the language that we're dealing with is all a dead language. Latin phrases and Greek phrases from old Greek, not modern Greek, that you learn in law school. And, you know, when people get in front of a court, they don't recognize the fact that they're not speaking English to you. And their definition of a word differs from the definition of a word that you have. And then, of course, they have all their implied presumptions and all those things that you're supposed to know when you walk in there. For example, if you don't waive an affirmative defense, you waive it. I mean, if you don't, you know, declare and claim an affirmative defense, you are technically waiving that affirmative defense. Well, how do you know that if no one told you ahead of time?
Right.
In other words,
right.
If you don't stand up right there and say, Your Honor, I've been defrauded, that's the opener. No one does that. Look at all the attorneys. They never use the word fraud in any of the complaints. Don't say the word fraud. Don't say the word fraud.
Right.
Look at all the complaints. Don't say the word fraud. Say misrepresentation or, you know, robo-signing. See, that doesn't say fraud. It's forgery, but forgery is fraud. So don't say forgery, say robo-signing. We've got to wake up in America. And they're not going to speak English unless we demand it. And
right.
That's why I say now, after 8 years fighting this battle, that all of us English-speaking people should require the court to offer us an interpreter for free. The illegal aliens get a free interpreter. Any other non-citizen gets a free interpreter. But you know what? We need an interpreter, and let the court pay for it. In other words, I don't understand a word you're saying, Your Honor. I want a competent interpreter here to explain to me. That would be an attorney, right?
Right.
For free to sit here and explain to me just what you said. Because you're not speaking
like
English to me.
Yes. So I've had quite a week, Ronald. My 30 days for my amendment, whenever the judge had offered me to amend my petition,
right.
I had 30 days, so this week was my deadline, but I wanted to, you know, clearly get it in before my deadline. So last Friday, I went and did a courtesy drop to the defendant's attorneys for Bank of America. I drove downtown from the Woodlands to the federal courthouse, went in, got everything filed. I filed over 1,000 documents and between the two, and I, you know, called to confirm that everything was done correctly.
seeing that it was done pro se. And I think you're going to be very proud, and I'll forward it over. You've helped me all along the way, and I've had so many different geniuses in so many different areas that have fine-tuned this to just really make this, you know, an outstanding case. So I don't think that the judge was ready to see the 5 causes of action go to 26 causes of action. I don't think that he was prepared for this. I don't think he was prepared for that.
Under the 5,000 word limit.
So I thought, well, okay. So he's telling me you want to amend your petition. Is that right, Mrs. Mercer? And I'm like, well, yes, sir. He said you're wanting to add this, correct? And you know, all along, me being like, you know, not very court savvy, I'm like, yes, sir. That's exactly what I want to do. That yes, sir. So anyway. So that's when he says, I'm going to rule in favor for Bank of America. I'm going to dismiss the case. And I'm just like, you're going to do what? I don't understand. This doesn't make sense to me. I don't, like, I'm sitting here showing you all of this stuff, and you're going to do what? Well,
yep.
If I would have, you know, just slowed down just a minute, I didn't realize he was doing me a huge favor.
What'd he do? I want to hear the favor.
The favor was he allowed me, he dismissed that in order to allow me to have 30 days to amend the petition to include all of the causes of action.
So he didn't dismiss the case?
No, sir.
Okay,
no.
You just said he did, so be careful with
your
language.
He allowed
you a 30-day continuance to
exactly.
introduce your documents.
Right.
Okay, that's
right.
very different than dismissing the case.
Right, but I mean, like, at first, like, that was the words. And then he's like, but I'm going to, you know. So he
no,
did
he
did give
never
me the...
use the word dismiss. Believe me, the judge knows the language. You heard
right.
something different.
Yes.
And that's being an in pro se litigant. And I understand that. But he never
right.
dismissed it, or it would not have the same case number.
Oh, okay. Well, that's true. Well, so...
Yeah.
I contacted
okay,
the
so court when you're saying your story,
yes,
you know, say it right, because you have people listening, and they're hearing you, and they're, you know, they're wanting to give you credibility, but no, your case was never dismissed. You actually won that battle because you introduced an adequately prepared amendment, which he accepted and allowed you 30 days further on the same case without dismissing it. And
right.
that would have set the plaintiff back 1,000 yards in any football game. You won.
Okay. So I spoke
that was a win.
That was a win. We'll take it.
Yay.
So I spoke with I sent an email to the defendant's attorneys and wanting to confirm that they had received, and her reply back was, yes, you know, Mrs. Mercer, you know, Mercer Tuckness, I have received the voluminous documents that you have, dropped off. I do not feel like it will be fruitful at this time for us to have another meeting since we've already had one. However, if you have a demand settlement, I will be more than happy to present it to my client. Sincerely.
There you go.
So today I got the demand settlement sent over to Bank of America's legal counsel, and I hope that after 9 years, I feel like 9 years is plenty, and I don't think that they want to deal with the condemnation of title. I don't think that they want to deal with every time that I found out that my loan got paid off through a title company, through an insurance policy, because I have uncovered all of that information too. And if you knew how many times my loan has been paid off, it'll make you sick to your stomach.
You know, and I saw just recently, for your listening audience, okay?
Yes.
I saw a video that was done by a comedian now,
mm-hmm.
that explains in about 10 or 15 minutes everything that you have in your complaint that you spent 8 years on. In other words, the cat is out of the bag.
Okay.
To the point, the
yes.
comedians are laughing about this conduct by these judges and these fraudulent foreclosure attorneys.
Right.
I'm going to send you, I'll send it to you on a PM. It's hilarious. But it's awesome. It's actually, yeah, you know what he did? And let me just tell you what he did. I'm trying to remember his name. I can see his face. But he saw on a website that he could buy $15 million worth of home loans, okay, for $60,000. And these were home loans just like yours that have been going on and on and on for 8 or 9 years. What they had done is the banks had actually diminished the value of the home loans to, they wrote them off their books. So they sold the residue of the paper, $15 million worth of it, to anybody that could come up with $60,000. So this comedian comes up with the $60,000, okay? And he buys them. Okay, now he owns the $15 million worth of, you know, home loans. And then, I have his video, he looks at it and he decides, I'm going to just write this off of my income tax, and I'm going to forgive all $15 million worth of these home loans, because now that I'm the owner, I can forgive them too. So he gets on stage in front of a complete audience, and he pushes a button, and he says, when I push this button, these $15 million worth of home collection cases are forgiven. And he hits the button, and everybody applauds. He said, I am the largest donor to the any effort, including Oprah Winfrey, when she gave away all those cars that only cost her $2 million, he said, $2 million. He said, I just gave away $15 million. How do you like that? So what it's really saying is how financial institutions, you have a $100,000 loan, I'm using that number to round this off. They don't get the collection, so they go ahead and they reduce the price to $75,000 for the next buyer. They get it off their books. They take the income tax right off. The 75 buys it. He goes ahead, can't collect on it. He sells it for 50. Now the 50 guy comes in. The other guy gets a 25 write-off, right? No, he gets another 50 write-off because he bought a $100,000 instrument. The 25 guy buys it. He gets a $75,000 write-off. Count these write-offs, will you? These are called derivatives. To where it's finally purchased by some idiot for $1,000, and that's who's in court with you.
Right.
That loan has been sold and sold and sold, and now that guy standing in front of you, the amount of skin in the game is maybe a grand. And if he gets your house, he just made himself $300,000-$400,000. That's why he'll lie and cheat and steal and put false evidence into the court records. He'll do whatever he can. Wouldn't you for $400,000? I would lie too, I think. I know I would, you know. The devil made me do it, something. But if I had 100 of these, that's $40 million. Would I lie and cheat and steal and buy off the judge and buy off the jury if I could, or do anything I could for $40 million? Well, they do it every day.
They do it every day.
And they're doing it
to you.
They
certainly do.
Now, that judge might be holding out for a higher number from the plaintiff's attorney, so they'll figure that out at the golf game next week. He gave him a month, too.
Yes, they will.
When they get on the golf course, you know, it depends on what you get out of your pocket. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because the
understand.
Judges don't care. They've been defrauding.
Well, actually, I do have to say, there has been a judge that has stepped up that he does care. He's sick and tired of it, and he has seen so much corruption, and I'm going to keep him very...
He's probably getting caught. It's been going on for 8 years. Now, all of a sudden, you've got to change your heart. That's when the heat's coming on, and that's what we're doing. We're bringing the heat down on these lying bastard attorneys and these lying bastard judges, and we're going to put them in jail. And that's what they're afraid of. And it's coming from all over the country. It's not coming from Texas. It's not coming from California. It's not coming from New York. It's coming from law enforcement all across the country. Just ask Hillary Clinton.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Emails. Yeah, they're getting real prevalent nowadays. So the emails
tonight,
they made the deals 5 or 10 years ago are coming up on them.
What do you know about condemnation of title?
Well, first of all, nothing.
Okay.
I don't understand the phrase. How do you condemn a title?
Well, next week we're going to have a guest on. Next week we're going to have a guest on. I'm going to cut it short because my father actually had a procedure today, and I'm going to go and spend some time with him. But next week we're going to have a guest on, and we're going to talk about condemnation of title. And it is
What's his name?
I'll post it on Facebook. I'll post it on Facebook.
Well, wait, you got to know what's his name. I can't pronounce it. It's not Ken, though, is it?
No, I can't pronounce me. Yes.
That's all right.
So,
can I make an announcement?
Absolutely.
I'm running for United States Congress here in Southern California.
Yes.
California District 8, and I just went ahead and got the FEC approval today. This is my first announcement on your show, Casey.
That you're running for first. I love it. Say it again.
All right, I'm running for United States Congress from Southern California, Congressional District 8, and I just got my paperwork an hour and a half ago from the Federal Elections Commission in Washington, D.C., and I am an official candidate for that office, and I intend to go into Congress and yell and scream and holler there just the way I did on this show.
I love it. Congratulations. And can I be your campaign manager?
All right, we're going to go. We're going to go to Congress. We're going to expose these crooks. We're going to expose these criminals.
And I am going to be your campaign manager, correct?
Well, I'm telling you, I'm announcing it on your show. I haven't even told my own daughter.
Wow, thank you.
I just got it in the mail. She hasn't gotten home yet. But I'm going to blast it, and I just want to let you know, I wanted your audience to hear that.
Thank you so much.
The foreclosure fighter from hell is going to Congress.
I love
it. I want your support.
You got it.
Enjoy your show, and I'll be listening. I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you for joining Connecting the Dots with Casey Tuckness. We'll talk to you all next week. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye.